Well, great to see you on this last Sunday of Lent and as we head into Holy Week. And so we've got a couple things upcoming for Holy Week just to pay attention to. So for Thursday and Saturday, we're going to have some guides that you can download on the website and you can take some time to do some reflection on Maundy Thursday and Holy Saturday. All right. And then for Good Friday, we're actually going to have Stations of the Cross, or our versions of Stations of the Cross, in here at Space 12. So it'll be between 6 to 8 p.m. It's not a liturgy, so you don't all have to come at 6 on time, because everyone, I know you all are so on time anyways, and we will come at 6. But you can come anytime between 6 and 8, if that makes sense. It'll probably take about 40 minutes to walk through the stations, but that'll be here on Friday. And then on Sunday, for Easter, as much as we love the panic-inducing claustrophobia that sometimes happens here, especially for the safety of our children, we've moved Easter off-site. So it's going to be outdoors. It's going to be beautiful at Southwest Keys. There's going to be lots of space to run around, to invite friends and family. There's going to be a wonderful playground for the kids. And it's close. It's like 2 minutes from here. So even if you forget, which I might forget, you can go, oh, it's off-site, and then it'll take you 2 minutes to get there. All right, so that'll be this upcoming Holy Week. So this morning is Palm Sunday, and so communities around the world are celebrating Palm Sunday in what is traditionally called the triumphal entry, or the celebratory entry. And we're handing out palms, that's right. And so in light of a triumphal entry or a celebratory entry, I know this might be a hard question to answer, but I'm just going to give it a go. What's something about our faith that you celebrate? Okay. So I don't know is an appropriate answer, but I'll give you a couple minutes. Just turn to a neighbor. What's something about faith that you celebrate? All right. Go. All right. Any thoughts? Resurrection. Okay, great. Hope, grace, good, community, Jesus, what was that? Being alive, yeah, great, mystery, good. So I was thinking through this, and a story came to mind. It was probably maybe 5 or 6 months ago. We were kind of waking up one morning and getting the kids ready for school. And that morning was my turn to drive. And so it was probably almost 7 o'clock. I'd gotten my coffee ready. He was drinking. Noah was, you know, kind of like half waking up, eating his breakfast. And as he had his backpack on, we were about to leave. And then so Karen kind of wandered up to just give him a hug and send him off, say hi. So as we were about to leave, she walks in his room, and then we're leaving the door. His room's like to the right of our front door. And as we were leaving, she pulls out a piece of paper. And she goes, Noah, what's this? And then on this piece of paper, she handed it to me, and then this is what it said on the piece of paper. It said, all people must be Christians, follow church rules, kill them, start wars. And she's like, what is this? And I saw this for a moment, and he's like, Mom, what are you doing in my room? And I had this moment of panic, like, this is what my son's celebrating about faith. Like, I've failed as a parent and as a spiritual guide. And he just looks at us for a moment. He's like, Mom, that's the Spanish Inquisition. That's my homework. And I'm like, okay, good, good, good thing. Good job, son. Your homework's excellent. So, on this morning, in our narrative, what the crowd is celebrating is so vastly different from what Christ is inviting us to celebrate. It's like two different wavelengths. And as we're entering into Holy Week this coming week, and Lent and Holy Week for us is really a pattern of spiritual transformation and maturity. So every year we have this pattern of transformation, maturity. How do we change? How do we grow? The question I'd like to ask is, what part of that transformation and maturity is worth celebrating for us? So this morning we're going to be in John chapter 12. As is our custom, you can turn to a friend and read it, and we will have it on our screens. John 12, 12 through 16. All right. Let's pick this up in verse 12. It says, the next day, the great crowd had come to the festival. So in Jerusalem, there was a great crowd that had formed. The festival was their religious festival, the Passover, much like Austin's religious festival, South by Southwest. And their religious festival, they're celebrating the deliverance of oppression and slavery from Egypt. That's what the Passover is. And I guess in our religious festival, South by Southwest, we're celebrating the deliverance from drinks you have to pay for, maybe. So there's a great crowd that's already formed. That's the point, right? So it's the town is hopping. And then they hear that Jesus is coming. So I don't know if any of you remember in 2014 when during South By and it was hopping. And then our city found out that Kanye and Jay-Z's coming. And our city lost its mind. It was just like, ah, right? And so they've gathered for this festival. And there's word that Jesus from Nazareth, who might save them from generations of occupation and oppression, is on its way. And they're excited. In Matthew's version, it says the city was shaking. Like, that's the buzz of it. Like, the whole city was like, oh, my goodness, Jesus. Right? That's the amount of excitement. And then in verse 13, it says, so they took branches of palm trees. So this is, oh, yeah, that was Kanye and Jay-Z. It says they took palm trees, which was a political statement. It was a statement of their own freedom. It was a very marked sign that they were waving. So they took palm trees, and then they yelled what? Hosanna. Which means rescue us, save us, or heal us. So I thought as we enter into Holy Week, maybe we could ask this question. What in our lives need healing? So let's try this thought experiment. So imagine yourself 10 years ago. So 2008. What were you doing? Where were you living? Okay, well, maybe a different job, different house. Okay, you got a picture of where you were in 2008? In 2008, what in your life needed healing? Like, what were some of those wounds that were surfacing at that time? Maybe it was relational. Maybe it was family of origin stuff. Maybe it was trauma you experienced. Maybe it was the church you needed healing from. So in the last 10 years, what's something that you've healed from? Just maybe it doesn't have to be big, just like a tiny piece. What's healing that you've experienced in this last 10 years? You got it? Now, in light of that, how might we celebrate healing that's still to come? Does that make sense? So I was thinking through my own story. And some of you guys know bits and pieces of this, but I thought I'd retell it. Because this community was a big part of my own healing. So I graduated from college in the mid-90s with a liberal arts degree. I was excellent at two things. I was good at reading and being unemployed. Okay? So I went off to seminary in search of meaning. Went there, didn't find meaning. It was bleeding money. Then got invited to Detroit to speak at a retreat, never spoken before. And then at the end of that weekend, got offered a job and the rest of my grad school paid for. I was like, yes. So I started pastoring in 1997. So for the next 14 years, this is what happened in my life. So from 1997 to 2011, moved to Detroit, brand new city, started a community, got engaged, planned a wedding that was in California, got married, got pregnant 6 months into our marriage. I didn't get pregnant, but I was involved. And then moved to Austin. Tried to start a church, had our first child, still tried to start a church for 7 years, had our second child. In those years trying to start a church, we moved buildings 5 times. In 2006, we started a church, which just gave me a lot of anxiety. I was like, oh no, we started it, what do we do, right? The way I appease my anxiety is I start new, more things. I know it doesn't make sense, but you know, I was just like young and unconscious and full of energy, right? So started a church, and I'm like, oh, what do I do? So we started a nonprofit. Started a nonprofit, what do we do? Started an intentional community. So 10 families kind of moved into East Austin. And I remember we were 4 or 5 years into the life of this community. And we had a staff situation that was complicated. I remember Sunday to Sunday, like the attendance would fluctuate. And I'm like, I don't know if we're going to make it. I remember we got an email from our treasurer at that time. And the email was like, we are running out of money. In 2011, have you ever left toast in your toaster on high and then forgot about it? Right? And you take the toast that's just like, just burnt, like to crisp. That was me in 2011. Right? So people would ask me, Gideon, are you tired? And I'd be like, no, it was like a toddler on adrenaline. I am not tired, right? And I like to tell people, this community and the leadership, they hugged me into a sabbatical. Like they hugged me out the door and said, shh, it's okay. It's okay. Just go around. And I think back on that season, 2011, if they didn't hug me into my sabbatical, I don't think I'd be at Vox today. I probably wouldn't be a pastor. And I think about that season. Do you remember the story when there's a group of friends, and in their friend group, there's a guy who's immobilized, so he needs his friends. And their friends are like, oh, there's a healer. There's a rescuer. Let's bring him to Jesus. And so they're like walking, hiking with their friend. I don't know how they're carrying them, right? And then they get to this house where the healer is supposed to be, but there's a crowd they can't get in. And then so the friends are like, oh, easy solution. Let's just cut a sunroof open. So you imagine Jesus is teaching and there's like a saw that comes through the roof. Right? And they look up and then suddenly this hole punches through. And then this guy maybe on a rope gets dropped in. And I imagine they drop him in and then everyone looks up and you see the face of his friends. They're like. And what I love about that story, it says Jesus healed him not because of his faith. Jesus healed him because of the faith of his friends. And I think back on that season, I was healed not because I had faith. You know, I think about the verse in Malachi that says this, but for you who revere my name, the Son of Righteousness shall rise with healing in its wings. I think I have it on the screen. I was so tired. I was so immobilized that I was incapable of even revering God's name. But it was this community and the faith of this community that healed me. And I love this picture of healing. It's like a young calf skipping. Have you seen a young goat when it jumps? We have a bunny. My wife's, I think it's called a binky. When the bunny is happy, it like skips and does like a little twirl. And that's what healing looks like. And so for us, what's healing that we've experienced maybe in the last 10 years? And how might we celebrate healing that's still to come? So often what we do here is we offer spiritual practices. But I thought since it's Holy Week, instead of offering us a spiritual practice, we don't need more to do sometimes. I'm going to offer us two spiritual meditations. Okay, so if you want to just find a comfortable place in your seat, and then I'm going to have a poem read to you. It's a Christian Wiman poem, read by Christian Wiman, and the poem is called Every Riven Thing. So riven is an old word, just means torn or broken, or you could say everything that needs healing. All right, so if you find your place, let's inhale together, take a deep breath, exhale. Inhale, exhale, and Every Riven Thing by Christian Wiman.
God goes, belonging to every riven thing he's made, seeing his being simply by being the thing it is. Stone and tree and sky, man who sees and sings and wonders why God goes. Belonging to every riven thing he's made means a storm of peace. Think of the atoms inside the stone. Think of the man who sits alone trying to will himself into a stillness where God goes belonging. To every riven thing he's made, there is given one shade, shaped exactly to the thing itself. Under the tree, a darker tree. under the man, the only man to see, God goes belonging to every riven thing. He's made the things that bring him near, made the mind that makes him go, a part of what man knows, apart from what man knows. God goes belonging to every riven thing he's made.
Let me take a deep breath in, inhale, and exhale. Isn't that beautiful? And so we'll post it on the website. And if this week, during Holy Week, you want to bring some of these meditations up to consider. All right, let's continue in our story. And so remember, this town is kind of bubbling, right? Matthew says that the city is shaking. And so they've got palm branches, which would be the equivalent of us taking a flag or at a protest like around the world and the country yesterday, like the posters. That's what this palm represented. And so what they're wanting is deliverance and a political rescue, right? So what they're expecting in their mind is a military parade. Right? Someone to come with might and to flex their power. And, you know, for better or for worse, military parades are on the public consciousness these days. And it's been something that's been done throughout history, right? It's usually powers that be that feel insecure and need to say, look, I've still got muscles. Like, touch my... That's what a military parade is, right? So here are some pictures of ones throughout history around the world. Here's one from Russia, from North Korea. Go to the next slide. Here's one from China. And then even in our fine country, there's a history of military parades. This is one from JFK in 1991 from the Gulf War. And then even yes, my fine country of Canada. Mounties, eh? Yeah, be scared, eh? So in the Roman Empire, go to the next slide. This was a thing because they needed to control the people. So they would come through with horses and shields and swords, and they're flexing. They're saying, stay in line. So what's important is decades before Palm Sunday, go to the next slide, there was a Maccabean revolution, and they actually freed the people from the empire, and they took back the temple. And so at the end of that revolution, they had a massive parade. There were cymbals, people were singing and dancing, there were horses, there was, you know, military, and then guess what they were waving? Palm branches. So decades later, they hear that Christ is coming and they're waving palm branches. They're expecting someone to come through flexing. They're expecting swords and horses and chariots. And then so you imagine this town is like it's shaking, right? Oh, he's going to come. It's going to be so strong and impressive. And then there's no military. And then I'm imagining like a couple lepers trickle in, like, hey, you know, like as a part of the parade. They're like, hey, where am I? Hey, how's it going? Right? And then like a healed demoniac, some like multiple personalities just waving. They're like, who are these? Imagine the disciples come in, like a couple fishermen, a tax collector, and they're like, where's Jesus? And Jesus knows the stage and the moment. He knows exactly what's happening. And he's like, watch this. And he doesn't come on a horse. But he comes on a what? A donkey. On an adult donkey. So go to this. So this is him on a donkey. Does he come on an adult donkey? No. Go to the next slide. He comes on like a cute baby donkey. Like, it's ludicrous. Just imagine. There's like lepers wandering around and like disciples. And he comes in on this cute little donkey. And I wonder if this is what he's saying. I'm going to heal us. But healing doesn't come from strength. Healing comes from weakness. And those parts of us that are weak, parts of us we're embarrassed about, what's hidden can't be healed. And if we allow the weak shadow parts of us to surface, he's like, give them to me. I'll heal them. You know, some of you know the comedian Pete Holmes. Some of you guys know. I was listening to him talk, and he was talking about how for decades, comedians performed at comedy clubs, and they would often go on in the middle of the night, like 2 a.m. And he said, for a lot of comedians, this was important. It was therapeutic because he said, at 2 a.m., I speak from the 2 a.m. parts of myself. The parts of myself, I say things that I'm not allowed to say at 10 a.m. Does that make sense? So he was talking about Dave Chappelle had two recent comedy specials, and he got in a lot of trouble. And he said the problem is people now can tape it. Dave Chappelle is talking about it at 2 a.m., but people are watching it at 10 a.m. They're like, oh my gosh, we can't say, right? So he's saying, what he thinks, though, as a comedian, these parts of him, it's important to surface, these shadow parts of him. Because he says, if we push them down, it comes out in even more distorted ways. And what he's saying is we now need to allow these weak shadow parts of us to surface because what's hidden can't be healed. Does that make sense? So that same week, I was listening. Do you guys know there's a podcast called Song Exploder? Some of you guys know? It's a brilliant concept. They just take musicians. They take 20 minutes to talk about their song, how they wrote it, how they put it together musically. Then at the end of it, they just play the song. So I was listening to Julian Baker. That same week, I heard Pete Holmes say that. And she says when she writes her music, she writes from the subconscious parts of her that aren't allowed to express itself in daily life. And she says, because it's art and music, people are able to handle it. And she says, I need those parts of me to surface, because if it doesn't surface, it comes out in more distorted ways. She's saying the same thing. What's hidden can't be healed. And I think it's interesting that artists and musicians understand that. But a lot of religious culture does the opposite. Like whatever you have, whatever weakness, whatever temptation, just push it down, just stuff it. Like get more bags and just hide it, right? And then put forth your best self and your strong self. And then what happens is we're a part of communities for decades and often nothing gets healed. Thomas Keating says it like this. He has a book called Divine Therapy and Addiction. And he says basically the same thing. Instead of weakness, he calls it temptations. He says, the fathers and mothers of the desert used to make a great deal of this process. They used to say that when you reveal your temptations or your weaknesses, you get a whole new insight into their power over you. I like how he says it. It is by externalizing them that we internalize these things, but once you externalize it, you can see it. As soon as you hear yourself saying the truth, you're in a whole new world. Temptations and weaknesses look so good when you keep it to yourself. By hiding the temptation through whatever motive, it's usually pride, you only make it worse. But as soon as you expose it to the outside air, and he talks about you don't just expose it to anyone. He talks about that's why in the Catholic tradition there's confession booths. He talks about spiritual direction. Like there's an appropriate time and place to express some of these things. But as soon as you expose it to the outside air, you get a clear view and you see it as the temptation that it is. Hiding them is the worst thing you can do. And so I just wonder for us, as we enter into Holy Week, what parts of us, maybe the shadow parts, the weak parts, do we need to allow to surface so that we can see it, so that light can be shone on it, so that it can be healed? And so we'll do our second spiritual meditation. And this is Christian Wiman again. And he has a poem called, I Said to My Soul Be Loud. And he's talking about all parts of his soul, the beautiful parts and the parts he doesn't want to deal with. He says, I said to my soul, be loud. So if you want to just find a comfortable spot where you're sitting, take a deep breath, inhale, and exhale. Another deep breath in, and exhale.
Madden me back to an afternoon I carry in me, not like a wound, but like a will against a wound. Give me again enough man to be the child choosing my own annihilations, to make of this severed limb a wand, to conjure a weapon, to shatter dark matter of the dirt dauber's nest, galaxies of glass, whacking glints, bash dancing on the cellar's fire. I am the sound the sun would make if the sun could make a sound, and the gasp of rot stabbed from the compost's lumpen living death is me. Oh, my life, my war in a jar, I shake you, and may the best ant win. For I am come a whirlwind of wasted things, and I will ride this tantrum back to God, and tell my fixed self, my fluorescent self, my grief-nibbling, unbewildered, wall-to-wall self, withers in me like a salted slug.
Take a deep breath in and exhale. All right, let's finish up our story this morning. And so we're in verse 16, and it ends with the disciples. So you imagine this crowd that's expecting a military parade, and then Jesus comes in on this baby donkey, right? And so everyone's confused, including his disciples. And this is their response. The disciples did not understand these. They're like, what is going on, right? And maybe we could say the disciples did not yet understand. And I like that. I think we should enter Holy Week with that. So what don't we understand about God? Of faith. Of suffering, of ourselves. And what if we were to celebrate the things in our life we don't yet understand? Does that make sense? So if you think about, if you're a growing, maturing, living human being, you're probably filled with things you don't yet understand, correct? Like, think about the things we do now without thinking. But at one point, we didn't yet understand, like how to walk, how to talk, how to kiss, how to play, how to make friends, how to have a good fight, how to apologize. Those are things we didn't yet understand. And somehow in faith, we're told we have to understand. And the moment we come to this place of not understanding, we go, oh, something's wrong, right? So recently, my older son, Joshua, so he's a senior in high school. I know. He's 6'2". Like, when he hugs me, it's like he's hugging a child. Like, hi, Dad. So we were visiting different schools. We were visiting St. Ed's, which is just down on South Concord. It's a beautiful campus, beautiful library. And then we went on the campus tour. We kind of went to the art building and talked to one of the professors. And then we were going to my car, and I could kind of see it on his face. Like he had this, like, he's just overwhelmed. I was like, hey, man, you know, you doing all right? How are you feeling? He's like, I don't know. I don't know what I want to do. It's like, this is overwhelming. Like, I don't understand how colleges work. Like, I don't know. And I'm like, okay, what you're feeling right now is exactly what you're supposed to feel. And I told him, I wish someone told me that in life. That feeling you're feeling right now is the rest of your life. Like, that's how life works. I told him, I was like, I could go back to college right now and I would probably kind of know what to do. But when I was going to college, I did not understand and it was overwhelming. And I was like, when your mom and I had you, it was overwhelming. I never had a kid. We didn't yet understand. When we had your brother, you would think we've gone through once, but we've never had two children. Does that make sense? And I was like, I'm in my mid-40s, and I like what your face is showing, that's what I wake up with. Like, that's that's how I feel every day. And Karen's parents moved here a couple years ago. They were retiring. And I said, when, you know, your grandparents were retiring, they were feeling that same thing. It was their first time retiring. They didn't understand yet. And I just told them, it just means you're a healthy, maturing, growing human being. And what if we in our faith just embraced and celebrated? These are massive things about God, of suffering, of death, of resurrection, ourselves, that we don't yet understand. And I'll just close with this. So many of you, have you guys seen that Spike Jonze video? It's turned into commercial with Anderson .Paak and Twigs. It's like an Apple commercial. So I'll show you a short clip of it. It's pretty cool, so check it out.
dance in the hallway. Only one more night in Los Angeles. I really thought that I can handle it. But the funny thing is, I was holding back tears. I didn't think this day would happen. I gave all this up for a chance at it. You would've thought I'd be the man for this. Till it's over. I'ma ride it till it's over.
All right, you get the general idea. So when I first saw this, I was like, I'm assuming this is all CGI, right? It's just on a green screen. That is not true. You want to see how he made it? All right, check it out.
Boom. And then it goes boom. And then right here locks. This mechanism shoots air, traps the tire, and it moves the entire set completely to this location. And then from there, it runs this way, and then it runs that way.
He came to the office and he brought some sets that he was working with and explaining us how he would approach this extrusion of the house on real time, simultaneously with the music.
He's gonna do that in 11 seconds. It could look terrible. It could not work. Like sets of shaking.
This is definitely one of the most challenging jobs I've ever worked on, but it's also one of the most creative. It's all compressed and it's all together. And there's so many different things happening.
It's literally so many moving parts. I thought that they might do more in like post and special effects, but all of it, like if it's a stretched house, the house is actually stretched.
By us pulling this lever towards that direction.
And cut. Woo.
She's gonna push her hip and move a wall. And so we're part of the wall. If we push too far one way, we might bump her. We might.
Isn't that crazy? That's like a 7-minute video, so you should go watch it. Okay, this is my point here. When Spike Jonze first made films, he shot skate videos. I guarantee he did not yet understand how to make this. I bet when he pitched the concept, he didn't yet understand how it would work. You could hear him while he was making it. He didn't fully yet understand how it would all come together. But his passionate embrace of what he didn't understand expanded him in his art. And what if we, Vox, in this Holy Week and in our faith, embraced the things of God and life and suffering and mystery and death and resurrection that we don't yet understand. And so this is my prayer for us as we head into Holy Week this week. And so Vox, may we look at our own poverty, our weakness, and welcome it and cherish it. May we not be afraid to share our death, because thus we will share our love and our life. In the merciful healing of God, the humility of the Son, and the curiosity of the Holy Spirit. Amen.